And this is KTOO. I'm Jamie Deep. Thanks for tuning in. The Juneau School District started off the school year with more than 90 open positions. Of those, close to half are certified staff, like teachers, counselors, and speech therapists. There are also openings for paraeducators, school nurses, and administrative assistants. According to staffing reports presented at a board meeting earlier this week, a quarter of the district's paraeducator positions remain unfilled. Paraeducators are also known as teacher aides or assistants. Superintendent Frank Hauser says the shortage means the district has to make tough decisions like moving employees to different buildings in order to meet the special education needs of students.
Those are difficult conversations. I have to have a staff saying we need to potentially have you move from one building that you've been at for a couple of years to another building. But in those decisions, the focus is always on making sure, are we meeting the needs of the students?
The district is also filling more than a dozen certified positions with employees from third-party contractors. Hauser says that's to bridge the gap in services while the district makes permanent hires. He says some contractors are working virtually, but the contracted teachers are qualified for the position.
A lot of our third-party services are experienced, qualified teachers that work for a third-party contractor to provide these services. Many of them have extensive knowledge on a specific area of need.
Hauser says long-term substitute teachers also aren't included in the vacancy data. The district is currently hiring several teachers from the Philippines, an increasingly common practice in the state. This comes as the school district continues to negotiate new contracts with its teacher and support staff unions. The school board is also considering how to spend more than $1.5 million in state funding that was restored by the state legislature after the governor's veto. The school board's priority list of things to add to the budget includes more staff positions and universal free breakfast. The Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska's Executive Council says it has concluded its review of abuse allegations against its president. As KTOO's Clarice Larson reports, some tribal members are asking for more transparency about what happened and what's being done to address it.
Tlingit and Haida's president, Shaf Fleish Richard Peterson, returned from a brief personal leave last week. His time away from his role coincided with the wide circulation of sexual abuse accusations made by his former fiancé on social media. On Friday morning, the tribe's executive council, which includes the president, hosted its regular monthly meeting. The tribe's first vice president, Cassine Jacqueline Peta, briefly acknowledged the allegations. Peta did not directly identify Peterson in her remarks.
Tlingit and Haida has been reviewing an employment matter with the assistance of outside counsel. Following a social media post concerning private personal lives of current and former employees.
Tlingit and Haida is Alaska's largest tribal government. Peterson has been its president for more than a decade. He attended the meeting on Friday and did not speak to the allegations during his presidential report. Peta originally informed Tlingit and Haida staff in an email earlier this month that the tribe's executive council was aware of the online accusations. She wrote that the council was taking the matter, quote, very seriously, and initiated a review. Peta says the review focused on whether inappropriate conduct occurred in the workplace and whether the tribe has effective measures to uphold workplace respect and accountability. She says the council also conducted a broader review of the tribe's policies, procedures, and reporting mechanisms. She said that review led to the council adding a third-party reporting system and additional training to its policies and accountability systems.
With the review of this matter now concluded, we are confident in moving forward with strengthened policies and supports in place. Tlingit and Haida remains committed to providing a respectful and welcoming workplace that honors our traditions and culture and reflect tribal values.
She did not disclose the results of the review, and the tribe has not responded to questions regarding the allegations. In 2019, Peta stepped down as the executive director of the National Congress of American Indians after nearly two decades. Her resignation came after she was placed on administrative leave following allegations regarding her handling of sexual and workplace harassment reports. The meeting on Friday was open for public comment. Multiple tribal members testified, asking for more transparency regarding the allegations and what the tribe's executive council is doing to address them. Sly Cloud Morrison testified that she is a survivor of sexual assault and said the allegations made her think about what the tribe owes its citizens.
It's deeply troubling when serious complaints are not handled with honesty and respect they deserve. And only through genuine transparency can our tribe demonstrate true respect for survivors and a real commitment to healing.
Following the accusations earlier this month, local Alaska Native artist and activist Chloe Kavanaugh gathered more than 350 signatures, demanding Clinton Haida hire an independent, trauma-informed investigator to review policy and leadership behavior. She testified at the meeting on Friday and said the issue raised broader questions about accountability in tribal government.
I realized through this process that there's really no way for us tribal citizens to contact our delegates and talk to those that represent our communities to be able to voice our complaints or things that we're seeing that we don't like.
The tribe's executive council is required to adhere to a code of conduct adopted by the tribe. The code states that members must not engage in, quote, any form of sexual harassment, coercion, or misconduct, and that members are required to self-disclose if they believe their actions fall short of council standards and may negatively impact the perception of the tribe. The code states that violations may result in disciplinary actions, up to and including removal from office. No criminal charges have been filed against Peterson as of Friday. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
And Alaska's medical board took the first step today toward restricting access to gender-affirming care for minors in the state. The board unanimously passed draft regulations that would allow physicians to be sanctioned for providing the care, and it could put their licenses at risk. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra reports.
The regulation change would consider medical or surgical intervention to treat gender dysphoria in minors as unprofessional conduct. The state medical board oversees licensing for doctors and physician assistants in the state, but not nurses or nurse practitioners. Dr. David Paulson is a neurosurgeon and member of the board. He says the policy is meant to prevent minors from making irreversible medical choices.
While compassion requires us to care for the youth in distress, we must recognize our duty to protect them from medical and surgical interventions that risk permanently altering their bodies or futures before they're fully capable of mature consent.
More than half of states have effectively banned or restricted gender-affirming care for minors. Opponents of minor care cite the permanence of intervention and potential for negative long-term consequences. Supporters cite high suicide rates for transgender youth, especially for those without access to gender-affirming treatment. And all major medical associations support access to gender-affirming care for minors, including options for medical interventions. Dr. Lindsay Banning says she's a parent of a transgender child. She spoke during the public comment period before the vote.
It's quite simply the standard of care for trans folks that's accepted by all major medical organizations in this country. Blocking access to this care has devastating consequences on the health and well-being of trans kids, dramatically raising rates of depression, anxiety, and suicide.
The draft will be open for further public comment for 30 days after it's reviewed by the state law department. A spokesperson for the board said the next public comment period will be announced on the state's online public notice system, but couldn't estimate a date. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
And a site on Douglas Island could be the future home of a casino-like gambling hall after a proposal from the Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska was approved by the National Indian Gaming Commission. Tlingit and Haida says the facility's approval represents a step toward economic self-sufficiency and sovereignty for the tribe. KTOO's Clarice Larson has more.
The land is on Fish Creek Road, not far from Eagle Crest Ski Area on Douglas Island. It's just a small piece of a native allotment owned by tribal members who lease it to Tlingit and Haida. Rumors of the tribe developing something on that property have circulated for years. The tribe first cleared that area in 2018 and has hosted fireworks shops there on and off over the years. But nothing substantive has been developed, until recently. In an email on Thursday, Tlingit and Haida spokesperson Dixie Hutchinson confirmed that the tribe is developing a gaming facility. The tribe intends to offer Class 2 gaming, which covers things like pull tabs, bingo, and slot-style electronic machines. But it doesn't cover games like poker or blackjack. The National Indian Gaming Commission's acting chair approved the tribe for site-specific gaming at the location in January. The decision came just days before President Donald Trump began his second term in office. For decades, federal officials and state officials in Alaska have said that Native allotments owned by tribal members in Alaska were not considered Indian country. Therefore, they are not under the jurisdiction of tribes and cannot be home to casinos or casino-like gaming halls under the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act. That stance held firm during the first Trump administration. The commission declined Klinkenheide's request for gaming authorization on the site in 2020. But Michelle Jockathot-Demert, a professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Tribal Governance Department, says the legal interpretation of Native allotments shifted when President Joe Biden came into office.
During the Biden administration, there was a solicitor's opinion that evaluated the laws and made the determination that the laws supported that Indian tribes in Alaska have jurisdiction over allotments and other land that's classified as Indian country.
Demert is also an attorney and Klinkenheide's former chief justice. She says gaming serves as an important governmental function for many tribes in the U.S.
You know, people look at it that it's just this big money-making operation, but it's so much more than that. It's an opportunity to make money and an opportunity to put that right back into your governmental system to provide essential services to your citizens.
The change in opinion during the Biden administration provided an avenue for tribes like Klinkenheide and the native village of Aklutnah to move forward. In February, Aklutnah opened a gaming hall on a native allotment near Anchorage. However, just days after the gaming hall opened its doors, the state of Alaska filed a lawsuit to shut them down, arguing that the state still maintains primary jurisdiction over native allotments. That lawsuit is still ongoing. Hutchinson says the project is still in the early phases of development, and she did not offer a timeline for when it would open to the public. She says the tribe intends to reinvest the gaming hall's revenue into essential tribal programs and services. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
You're listening to KTOO. Thanks for tuning in.